out of it are the issues of life. And of course, as Luke stated, there are four soils that are mentioned there in Luke chapter 8. And we pray that everyone has the fertile heart, fertile soil, that the things that are said and done will help each and every one of us. Once it's planted in your heart, it will flourish. And in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, Paul opens up, but he states here, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are a good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things." What a wonderful way to set your mind, what you should be meditating on. And lastly, from Psalms 139, 23 and 24, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in a way everlasting." Ken, would you open us up with a word of prayer, please? Ken Bush. Thanks, Ken. It's really great to be here this morning to talk about this. Love. Love more, sin less. So just a quick recap of what the book covers. Love exalted, the gospel. Love subverted, sin. The loving mind, love clarified. Love confused, unbelief. Love redirected, repentance. The loving choice, salvation, which is love rescued. Chapter 7, love matured. Sanctification. Chapter 8, love tested. Temptation. The loving church, which we're really going to get into today, with a carryover. We're actually not going to cover in a portion of chapter 9. Love shared, fellowship. Love fulfilled, restoration. 11, love multiplied, evangelism. The loving God, love motivated, hope. And lastly, love inspired, unity. So just a catch-up moment from where we were last time. We talked about love tested, temptation, the gift of self-awareness. That's what temptation actually provides us with, self-awareness. And it allows a spotlight to be shown on what you are doing that's not proper in God's eyes. Now you have an idea. Boom, spotlight's on it. Now you can run a biopsy of what's going on. You can see your spiritual health at that point in time. And lastly, he brings up the idea of a time machine. Let's say you've experienced that thing before. You can go backwards and say, these were my feelings. This is how I felt once I committed this sin. The temptation's right in front of you. Do I want to have that same feeling again? Do I want to have that spiritual hangover? Is that really what I want to do? Or you can jump forward and see the consequences of you following through with that temptation that could lead you to that, to cause you to sin. Those are the points, the gift of self-awareness, the gift of spiritual growth that comes with temptation, alertness, awareness. Now you're aware of what your issues are. Now you have your senses tuned to what your issues are. You can be on the alert. And lastly, the gift of glorifying God. We glorify God through doing the right things. God is glorified. If you want to say, hey, that's number one, well, God is glorified. You've fallen, or a person has fallen. It's both ways. Now it's the restoration moment. Love fulfilled. How does sin work? Well, just a quick recap from lesson three. There are three parties: the adversary, the advice you're going to get internally, externally, and so on and so forth, and of course, the accomplice, which is you, us, whichever way you want to look at it. The adversary, he's looking for who he can take with him. And the advice he's going to provide you, or the advice you give yourself, or the advice that somebody else gives you. And one way or the other, whether you win or lose, you're the accomplice here. And include me. restoration. Nowhere is Christianity's magnificence more evident than in the way Christians are to treat human failure. Everyone sins and falls short of the glory of God. And also not meeting our own expectations. Human failure. How many of us have fallen? Yeah. Sinned. Romans 3:23. We all fall short of the glory of God. We know this. It's going to happen. Guess what? It's going to happen again. You know why? You're breathing. There's temptations. We're human. We know we fall short based on what tempts us. Well, temptation is not the sin, it's the committing of the sin that's actually the problem. And also the point of not meeting your own expectations. There's a couple of factors there. Forgiving yourself and someone else helping you to be forgiven, to restore you. Not meeting your own expectations. Now what? You sin. When we feel spiritually stuck, when transformation is taking too long, man, I just can't get past this. When confronted with a gnawing sense of personal failing, how do you handle it? We're going to quickly go over how the author dealt with the situation. He actually was pointed out a letter where a new Christian had written him and said, "I'm struggling. It's not happening quickly enough. Help me." So, he talked about God's plan for producing positive change in a person's life. He also stated perfection is not possible, but significant growth can and should occur over time. Is that a true statement? How many of you guys go out and plant something in the backyard, the back 40, depending on what you have, and you're like, it's not growing fast enough? I planted them yesterday. Why are my tomatoes coming up? Does it take time? Hey, I threw those seeds over the fence, over in the rocks, the briars, and so on and so forth. Why are my tomatoes coming up? What's some of the things that you have to do to allow your tomatoes to grow? Water. Prepare the soil. Throwing them over the fence is not going to work. How many people grew up on a farm? Jim, Neil, yeah, see. Did you guys just go out there and just wish things to happen? Did you have to put some work into this? It's hard work. Pulling up the weeds, the rocks, and so on and so forth. Personally, I'm not a gardener. Sonova is. I just kind of supply the money to go for her to go get whatever she wants to get to plant. But she'll go out there and she'll toil in the soil and so on and so forth, and it grows. Now, pretty much she can go to Lowe's or Home Depot or the farmer's market and get ready-made plants. That's not the way it works with us. Plant the seed. It's got to grow. Now, you work with what you have, but it's got to grow, and it's got to be tended. Got to have the right amount of sun, the right amount of this, and so on and so forth. He also, whenever you're dealing with someone who's struggling, how to handle the surge of emotions, feelings, I don't have, I'm depressed, and so on and so forth. These are real. You can't brush that off and just say, hey, dude, suck it up. Well, there does come a time and a place when you might have to tell someone you really need to get tough and deal with this. But their feelings are real, and you just can't brush them aside. And the key, here's one of the biggest keys. Who are you associating with? Who are you associating with? Fellowship with the brethren is key. Is so key. We're here on Sunday morning before morning worship service. Tonight we're going to have evening worship service. There's classrooms going on across the building. There are multiple congregations of the Lord's Church across the world, depending on the time zones that they have met, or they're meeting right now, or they will meet later on in the day. It's worship service. It's an opportunity to worship God. But it's also an opportunity for us to fellowship, to help one another. Do we really, I see David, do we really, really, really look forward to coming to worship service? Because remember, we're not just a group of people. We're the church. We're God's family. We are family from different walks of life. David. He used an interesting word. He talked about investment. Investment. Time, energy. And just sometimes just being around somebody. I know it's good whenever all five of us are just at home together. Just because we're there. We're enjoying one another's company. But your investment also requires love. Actually, the love determines your investment. Your true investment, if you want to say. God made us social creatures. And we benefit from one another. Yeah, you can trudge along for so long by yourself, but eventually you need some help. You really, really need some help. And even point that David raised, you know, in the sense of you're not always thinking these things, but you got to come back to center and always try to put this in the forefront of your mind. Tonight's another opportunity for us to come together in fellowship, not just for the graduation fellowship, but just to see one another, you know, to be thankful for the guys who are graduating college or high school, but just being in one another's presence, talking, enjoying one another, because we'll get to this in a second. The word provides essential knowledge for growth, but the church provides necessary support for growth. God's family was designed to be a safe environment for tackling tough problems and processing painful feelings in a spiritually healthy way. We help one another. We promote the growth of one another. Going back to the tomatoes, it's cool to watch your tomatoes, bing, come up out of the ground. And then you watch them grow. And eventually they're ripe. Or whatever you're growing out there. And you see the fruits of your labor. The fruits of our labor is after death. But also, while you're here, you can see the fruits of your labor. Through your children, through the people that you come in contact with. Whenever people leave you, do they feel blessed, or they're like, whew, I'm glad Mike Feast is gone, man. That dude was driving me crazy. Which one is it? Or let's get closer to home. Whenever you come to worship service, well, I'll piggyback off of what Jim used Wednesday night, the 80-20 rule, if you want to say. 20% of the work is done by 80%. 20% of the work, no, 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people. He also said 20% of the problems, 80% of the problems are created by 20% of the people. Where are you on this 80-20 rule? Are you part of that 20% that's causing 80% of the problems? Are you part of that 20% that's helping 80%, doing 80% of the work? Which one are you? It's really key. It's really, really key that you're part of the 20%, but we want to defeat Pareto and say 40, 50, 60% of the people are doing the majority of the work, 70%, and so on and so forth. We also dealt a little bit with the healing church in the sense of sins are either private or public. Dealing with a private sin on your own is probably not the best way to deal with it. And why is that? Why is dealing with a sin not necessarily the best, by yourself, probably the best way to do it? Sean said that sometimes you'll find justification in what you're doing, and you'll just keep right on doing it. Neil? Neil said, if you bring your sin before the church, you get your support factor there. The prayers, people coming up, talking to you, and so on and so forth. And what was that second portion? Accountability. Accountability. Anyone else? David, then Hope. Well, better yet, Hope, then David. David, you've already talked. Hope. David. Promotes humility. Notice my disclaimer up there. It's not saying you should go public with every sin that you commit. Why is that? Why is that? Jeff. You got a lot of immature Christians in the congregation. Everybody can't handle what's going on. And really, if it's a private sin, sometimes it's exactly that. It's something that you, with spiritually brethren, can help you with that. We have gossips, we have this, we have that. It's not necessarily always to your best advantage to turn around and come forward with everything. Now, don't turn around and try to handle it on your own. That comes full circle right back to the first portion. It's not handling on your own. It's dealing with it with someone. It might be that you might need to come forward. Once it becomes a public sin, definitely you have to deal with it then publicly. And we've talked about it can be a positive event, or it is a positive event due to, hey, I'm not the only one struggling with this. And like what we talked about before, if you see someone come forward here on Sunday mornings, I've never seen this in other congregations before, but you'll see if someone's sitting here, I've seen people stretch all the way across the front of the auditorium, or someone sitting over there after they've come forward, you'll see people all the way on the other end. And it's interesting to see, even when someone's, side note, someone's baptized, to see folks not leaving, whichever door they come out of, you'll see a long line of people waiting to greet their new brother and sister in Christ. Such a wonderful thing. That's what love is about. And to hear people saying, hey, you know, whenever you're helping that person who just came forward, to say, it's okay. And they'll sit and talk to you, they'll shed some tears with you, you'll share some with them, talk a little later. But at least you know where that person is. You know where to start to help that person, to help them move forward. This is the launching point, really, for where I know we've gone 20 minutes, but this was to get us up to this point. The healing church, the church's responsibility. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone, and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load. The church's responsibility: framing it, naming it, and sustaining it. Let's frame it up. This is the context that we're going to deal with this. Brethren, what's the importance of the word brethren here? How does that word come into play? Paul's introducing a thought. Who's supposed to be doing this? Neil. Essentially, Neil is saying we have to be in one another's lives, deeply in one another's lives. We just coming here on Sunday mornings is not enough. Sunday evenings, Wednesday nights, we got to talk. We got to be in one another's lives. We have to know what's going on. We have to know each other. We're family. No problem is bigger than our relationships, our relationship, especially with the Father. In Genesis chapter 3, there's the account of, did I say 3? I'm glad you guys can read. Genesis chapter 13, there's the account of Abraham and Lot, and they're having their dispute there about some of their workers are having issues with one another there. And what's Abraham's response to that whole situation?
We're brethren. We're not going to fuss about this.
We're brethren and we're not going to fuss about this. We are brethren and we're not going to fuss about this. That's okay to have a disagreement, but you know, at the end of the day, we need to squash this and be done with it. 2 Thessalonians 3 talks about you work your problems as brothers. That's his point. Family. And you know what? To the point Neil was bringing up a few seconds ago, in a sense of being in one another's lives, we should be able to say pretty much what needs to be said to one another. And I'm not saying cram something down anyone's throat, but we should be able to have open dialogue. I guess that's what I'm really saying, is we should be able to have some open dialogue. And it's all said in love. Jim Flowers. Bless you. Uh-huh. He has a key point there in the sense he says he brought up the situation with him growing up with three sisters, and they didn't always agree. They squabbled sometimes, but hey, that happens. But someone from the outside said something negative about his sisters or attempted to do something to them, they had to go through Jim. They had to deal with him. And I'm pretty sure whenever somebody, if they said something negative about or did something negative towards Jim, they had to go through his sisters. Same thing with us. Satan is coming in from the outside. Better not say anything. He better not attack Sean because I'm with Sean. He's got my back. And so on and so forth. We might not agree on something for the moment, but there's a bigger problem out there that we need to come together on. Knock yourself out. Yeah.
But he said he'd rather be wrong than have a dispute with his brother. I'll read you from 1 Corinthians 6, verse 5. I say this to your shame. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you, not even one who will be able to judge between his brethren? But brother goes along against brother, and that
to that point, now you're bringing me back to 13 and 8. That was a point that was on my mind, you know, initially when we went there. Was, if you want to say who lost between Abraham and Lot, who lost, if you want to say. Yeah. But Abraham was like, hey, you pick where you want to go. It's not that big of a deal. You choose over there, I'm going to go in the opposite direction. He let him decide because it wasn't that big of a deal. At the end of the day, sometimes whenever we're caught so much in the moment, but then if you fast forward 20 years down the line, something you were having a fit over 20 years ago, sometimes you can't even remember what you were arguing about. And you stop talking or dealing with that person or so on and so forth, was it really worth it? No. Now you're trying to rebuild and mend some bridges with the brethren. And I personally never seen it, but negative things have happened within the church. Whenever you hear people arguing over the carpet, this, that, and another, and you say, really? There's souls to be one. And there's souls to be saved even within us. And we're having issues over something like the carpet, per se. This is just a building. We're the real church, the people. Continuing with framing it, the mindset. For Christians, problems should always be considered in the context of their relationship to Christ. All interaction must be guided by consciousness of this spiritual connection. However great the sin, family love should overshadow all that is said and done. If a person has a trouble keeping this in mind, that's not the person that's spiritual that needs to be given advice. Compassion provides the most favorable context for helping others. You got to be compassionate. You can't put people in a headlock and expect them to, you know, to do the right things. Christ is about winning people's hearts, not forcing them to do things. Because that's love. Love is the key to optimizing outcomes. To Neil's point, the stronger the bond, the easier it is to have a conversation with somebody. There are still the tough conversations that have to take place. But if you really have that relationship with the person, it makes that conversation easier. I didn't say it's going to be easy. It just makes it easier to have that conversation. That person on the other side, the receiver, if you guys have that connection, they know you're not trying to bring them down. They know you're looking out for their best interest. You might not say everything correctly. They're going to give you the benefit of the doubt. And whenever someone comes to you, if you really know that person, and especially if you're the person who's, I guess if you want to say, the more mature one, you're going to give that person the benefit of the doubt about what they're trying to say. Sometimes you might even have to guide what they're trying to say to you to get it out. But that's okay. That's okay. We're in this together. Let's make it together. So now you've got your mind framed. Here's one of the keys. You got to name it. The problem that's there. If a man is overtaken in any trespass, acknowledging blameworthiness is helpful rather than hurtful. No one likes to admit fault, but it puts a handle on the problem. That person are you. You have to acknowledge you're the owner of whatever it is that's wrong. That person are you, whoever the person is committing the sin. Let's go to Galatians chapter 6 and 5. Mr. Pons, would you read that for us? And Jim Flowers, Torrance, would you get James chapter 1 and 14 and 16?
Galatians 6 and 5.
Yes, sir.
Each one shall bear his own load.
Each one shall bear his own load. Each one shall bear his own load. You have some skin in the game here with what you do. Actually, you own that skin. It's on you. We're here to help, but you own it. We'll help you lift it, but you got to bear it. We're tempted by our own desires. God doesn't do this to us. This is what we are tempted by. Again, the temptation is not the sin. It's the acting upon that temptation is the problem. Then it goes back to, you got to own it. You got to own this. Yes, Lily. those of you on that side, Lily just gave an example of when she wronged someone, and it was hard. You know, her kids even called her on it and said, "Mom, that's wrong." But she had to own it. She owned it eventually. But she owned it. And she had to straighten it out. Jim. He used the example of, if you want to say, married, bearing one another's burdens with bear your own, and how folks will say, use it as an excuse to say, well, no one was there to help me, so I just put it down. Excuse me, that's not an excuse. God gave us each the command to own your own problems, own them. And just because no one, we're wrong for not helping. We own that. That's on us. But that doesn't give you an excuse to just put it down and say, you know what, hey, nobody's going to help me, so I'm out. No, doesn't work that way. You have to own your own problems, Val. Val just stated you have to really be specific in naming it, in helping that person understand what just took place, why it's a sin, and so on and so forth. Because if you don't help them understand their sin and naming it, putting your finger on it, it's kind of, and you end up talking around it, there's really, they didn't grow from this, and they don't really understand what really took place. And that's really key, in you have to name it. And I see you, Hope. You have to name it. It's no different than having the conversation as a manager to employee and to a certain, well, it is different. But in the sense that whenever you're having that review, and you have to be very, very, very specific in trying to help that person to move forward. She talked about knowledge without sin. Excuse me, knowledge without understanding. You can know something, but you just don't understand it, and then you want to try to go give someone some advice on it. That's dangerous. That's a very, very ugly space to be in. And you can actually, what's that? God says, the blind leading the blind. And there's a ditch with both of y'all's names written on it, if you want to say, because you're going to help that person find the ditch. Yes, Mr. Emmett. he talked about how a Christian matures, and as that goes on, through your maturity and you're studying, the Word of God pricks your heart even more. You actually shine that mirror against your, you know, hold it up in front of yourself, and you can actually see yourself for who you are. And you actually want to make some changes, if you want to say. It's not like what I love what Jeremy said a few weeks ago, where he said, you know, he said you can use it like a funhouse mirror. You can see what you want to see, if you want to say. But in reality, the Scriptures show you for who you really are. And as a mature Christian, you really want to look at it, the mirror into your soul, to make the proper adjustments so you can continue on the proper path. In Galatians chapter 5, Paul has a list of very nasty characteristics there. And the author, he lumped them into two categories, immorality and anger. From Galatians chapter 5, 19 through 21. And both problems, it involves a loss of self-control. Both categories, if you want to say. Loss of self-control. And the degree of control, I have one moment, one 2 minutes. The degree of control one displays in life usually determines the amount of satisfaction one derives from life. The third point he listed, successful relationships are a byproduct of self-discipline. And lastly, greater control equals greater love. Greater control equals greater love. If a person is overtaken, that just means at this moment, that is the ruling principle in that person's life. But he talks about restoration, so that means that person can come back from this. That means the person can conquer this. That's part of our role, is to help that person conquer that. And even yourself, conquer that portion. And lastly, I just stated that portion. Although some sins will be laid to rest permanently, new challenges will always arise. We're always going to have things in front of us. Always. Always. Thank you for your time.